Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Pocket Buds GCAP special. I'm here in Melbourne. I just landed maybe like five minutes. That's not true. I landed like an hour or so ago, maybe even more. I can't fully remember. But now I'm here in Melbourne and I'm here at my hotel. And if you're wondering who's I'm, that's right. It's me, Ruby Innes, the host of this show, the always host of this show. And for this GCAP special, basically what the gist of it is today I will be taking my silly little tush all around the MCEC in Melbourne, where GCAP, which stands for Games Connect Asia Pacific, is being held. It is an event for publishers, for developers, for games companies, and for media, and for me to go and chat amongst each other, make some deals. Me, I'm not making any deals. I'm just talking. I'm just talking to people about their work, about what they do. And I thought it might be a good idea to kind of start this out with a chat with my roomie. a chat with a friend, an ex-neighbor, a current roomie, and also curator for the Powerhouse Museum, Chloe Appleby. Chloe.
Oh my god, I'm eating a sandwich and you've sprung this on me.
Yeah,
in our room.
I thought it'd be funny. I thought it'd be really funny. I thought
it's hilarious. I've got avocado still in my teeth.
Yeah.
And you just handed me a mic.
I thought it would be a really good goof to, like, instead of kind of going, hey, I was just wondering, like, would you be able to do this intro with me? It's just like a quick little thing to talk about GCAP.
It
won't take long. And then you can go on to that event that you were telling me about that you said that you were just leaving to go to.
Thank you.
I thought it'd be funnier to kind of just start. I thought it'd be funny.
No, this is funny. This is great.
Chloe, you're here with
I'm here
me in Melbourne.
In our little hotel room.
Our lovely little hotel room. And to you, As a curator of games at the Powerhouse Museum, what GCAP kind of represent for you, I guess?
GCAP it's a really, really wonderful experience, honestly. I mean, for me, it represents people coming together and connecting and building those fantastic relationships and really showcasing what games are about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's kind of like a huge thing in Australia as well. Like, I mean, we're kind of getting more and more events for games in Australia, which is cool, but less so consumer events.
Yeah, more industry based.
And more industry based, which I think is really good. Like, it takes us a little bit of time to get out to anywhere.
Yeah, I mean,
Australia's in the middle of fucking nowhere.
We're a fucking island, eh?
Literally. So it just it's far away, yeah. Right? And so it's good to have these events here in Australia. But I guess because it is an industry event, people would kind of, I guess, not fully understand like what it's for. So,
oh yeah, I mean what GCAP is really for is for we have, it's a great learning opportunity. So there's talks happening where people can share knowledge. I did one yesterday about museums and people were like, why? This is a games conference. I'm like, it's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. I'm here. I'm showing you things. Like, preserve. Okay. If you're listening, preserve things.
They're like, why is the music? And you're like, yeah. Shh, no, it's okay. It's Don't fine. Worry about it.
Here's a photo of me in binoculars. It's fine.
I'm looking for games.
I'm looking, looking for
gaming
you.
Gaming binoculars.
And they've also got this thing called Meet to Match. So you can book in meetings and you can really connect with people that really align with you too. And it's a chance to showcase also your weird. We had a great Screen Australia. They launched their new three funding programs and they were really emphasizing on bringing your weird because that's what Australia is really leading in.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got Untitled Goose Game, Cult of the Lamb, like
huge.
Weird games. Fantastic. Love them.
Weird games. I feel like Australia prides itself.
Yeah.
On weird games.
We're leading in that.
We're doing it better than anyone else.
Simon Boxer with Winnie's Hole.
Oh my God.
What the hell?
I love Simon.
I love Simon.
But like Simon Boxer and the fact that he's also working with Jacob Janerk, on the dungeon experience. It's like two horrible minds.
Oh, together.
Horrible, brilliant minds.
Absolutely. And they just made big, this masterpiece.
Horrible.
I saw,
brains.
Got to see the dungeon experience while we're here as well. And that's
It's so much fun. It's so much fun.
I'm like, okay, this is game.
So
I love
silly.
It.
I've played a demo of it, and when I got to the to the little reception, and there's the table man, and I was like, oh, is this okay? Like, is this all right? But he was just enjoying himself.
Yeah,
like,
he was having a good time.
That was his dungeon experience. And the thing with a dungeon experience is everybody has a different dungeon experience. And I think that's really beautiful.
I think it's really wonderful. And you can, fondle nipples in the dungeon experience.
You can. You have to push these really long nipples all the way in, but really slowly.
Really slowly. And you know what? I love the little squelching sound that goes along with it too.
It's definitely a good noise and not yucky in any way.
And you're not uncomfortable the whole time you're playing it.
It's good vibes.
Great vibes.
Great.
We love
vibes.
The vibes. We love the vibes. We've gone on a tangent.
So I'm here at GCAP. Later on, you'll be hearing me talking to various different developers from Abandoned Sheep, who are working on Schrodinger's Cat Burglar, all the way to Hipster Whale.
Iconic.
Quite an interesting story. So iconic. Like, heaps of people don't know that Crossy Road comes from Australia.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a really good chat. But yeah, this is kind of just the opening from Chloe and I.
Love
in
that.
Our beautiful hotel room. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the rest of the show.
My name is Ren Breyer. I was creative director on Unpacking.
What was that like?
It was very hectic.
Yeah.
It was a lot of roles in one, I'd say, because we were such a small team. The core team was just four people. Mm. And then we had a few more contractors who worked for anything between like 2 weeks to 8 months on the project beyond the four. So I did a lot of different roles, essentially, from doing art direction to like actually doing art myself on the project to like level design, just kind of general game design. I did production for most of the project. Tim and I were also doing the community management and social media management. Narrative design, so just across almost anything.
Yeah, and with Unpacking, because Witchbeam, you were actually talking about before that Unpacking didn't actually start as a Witchbeam project, but eventually became one. Would you be able to talk about that a little bit? How did that happen?
Yes, that's right. So it started off as a side project that me and Tim made because we were like, we're both game developers and we're a couple. Let's make a game together that could be fun. And we didn't know exactly what we'd make initially. We were tossing up a few ideas, but Unpacking just kind of popped into our heads when we were unpacking when Tim moved in with me. And like we kept developing this idea. And we ended up submitting it to this games accelerator program called Stugun as a sort of, like, we didn't think the game would get in, but we were like, this is going to motivate us to make a prototype. It's like gives us a deadline, so it actually happens. And after that, you know, when it doesn't get in, like, we'll just work on it in our free time. And then it got in. So we flew to Sweden for 2 months to work on the game there in, like, a cabin in the woods with 14 other teams all working on their dream games. So it was this really crazy experience, and like suddenly we realized essentially that people liked this idea. They liked our initial prototype. We got to show it there at like the closing kind of showcase that we did for Stugun, and we got some interest from like a publisher and from other people in the industry. So we were like, okay, this thing has legs, and then it went viral just shortly after that when we got back to Australia, maybe like a week or two later. So we were like, yeah, okay, we need to make this into a real project. And we thought, why not do it through Witchbeam, which is Tim's company. So Tim co-runs Witchbeam with Jeff and Nart.
Yeah.
And Jeff was already like signed onto the project as well. He said he wanted to do the audio for it. So we're like, well, this is already 2/3 of Witchbeam. May as well make this a Witchbeam project. And I kind of joined in.
And that's how it came to be. And yeah. What would you say would be some of like the biggest challenges you kind of faced during development? I mean, going to a whole different country to kind of bring it together is incredible. But what were the bad parts?
Yeah, that part was really good. oh, man, the bad parts. I don't know. I think part of it is just the slog of making a game for 3.5 years. Like, just staying on target is hard, staying motivated. It helps a lot to have a team and a team that you like and a team that you meet up with, like, every morning for stand-up to say, this is what I did yesterday, this is what I'm doing today. And, like, you see the progress. You can see every 2 weeks you do your, like, meeting to plan for next week and next time. And you're like, oh, okay, so this is moving. This is moving ahead. Small changes are happening and it's adding up. So that was the difficult part. It was also difficult to kind of let go a little. So I was originally like the only artist on Unpacking, right? When it was me and Tim. Tim was programming and I was doing art. And so this thing was my baby. And all of the art was mine. And there's something very satisfying about being able to say, this is all me. I did this. Mm. And suddenly we realized that we're just not going to have time to make it. Like it would take 2.5 years to do like the art. This is what we estimated if I was doing it on my own.
Oh my goodness.
And I also had other roles.
Yeah.
So we were like, this is impossible for me to do on my own. And we hired another artist, and that was Angus, who ended up being just amazing. But initially, I didn't really want to give Angus things to do that I wanted to do.
I was like,
no, this bit is cool. I want to do this. I'll totally. Just give them the boring parts. But like, I just very quickly realized that I don't have time to do all these things. And I started giving him more and more work that I wanted to do. And that was hard to let go of, but I think pretty quickly I adapted and realized that this is actually such an asset to have someone who can do this instead of me. And like I can just give instructions and give feedback and the project still ends up looking like I want it to.
Yeah, it still ends up being fantastic. And as somebody that's played Unpacking, I thought something quite, and I don't know what other word to use, but magical, something quite magical about Unpacking is its ability to tell a life without any conversations at all. And how exactly did you go about achieving that? Because surely that was the goal, right?
Yeah.
How did you go about achieving that?
Oh man, what did we do? I don't know. It's been a while.
It's been a while.
Let me think about it. No, basically we knew from the beginning that we wanted the items to tell the story. Because when we were like unpacking Tim's things, I was looking at his stuff and thinking, wow, you can tell a lot about a person from the items that they own. And like, of course, while we were packing Tim's stuff, he was telling me stories like, oh, this is this thing that I got at this place, and this is someone gave this to me, you know. So I'd hear the stories of the items, but there was even something just from like looking at all the items sitting on the shelf that you're like, this tells a story.
Yeah.
So we originally were thinking we could tell like a lot of different stories from a lot of different people, like basically have a room at a time, right, and show the life of a character kind of through that room, like a little snapshot of their life, of who they are.
What was your favorite level to design?
What was my favorite level? Oh man,
I know that's such a, it's like to design, asking to pick favorites. I get it.
My children. No, I'm not sure. Let's see. It's because like I got to be the most hands-on on the child room, the childhood room, but like everything really had its high points. The house was really fun, like the final level, because it was like the culmination of everything and it was enormous. It's also exhausting to work on because it's so big. The boyfriend level, definitely it was so fun to make his stuff take up as much room as possible.
Yeah.
I feel like with the boyfriend level, I got to be like the most creative and devious. So that was fun. But then, like, I don't know, the housemate level, for example, leans really heavily on my own life experiences. It looks like the place that I lived with housemates in, called the dress form in the living room. Like, my housemate had a dress form like that with a cosplay on it, though it wasn't Sailor Moon. so it just a lot of these levels were really personal. And there was something very fun about each and every one.
Moving on to GCAP, what brings you here?
Technically, I was here to give a talk, which I just did and went well.
And what was your talk on?
Oh, it was on the tools and pipelines of unpacking. So I gave it together with Tim, who made the tools, and me, who worked with the tools and requested them. So we were able to talk about it like from those two angles, and it was kind of like pretty casual, like for a layperson, but we really showed like all of the tools that we used, or at least the major ones. I really liked that talk. We gave it in Europe and in the UK before, and like we updated it for here. So that was my main reason for coming here, I guess. Like, that's my professional reason. But my real reason is that I love GCAP and I love Games Week.
Yeah.
I've been coming every year since 2016. I can't not come.
So that was Ren Breer talking about the making of Unpacking. And I was like, I wasn't aware that so much of it came from her own kind of personal experience with moving out.
Yeah, no, it was really, really interesting to hear that. I'm also, I'm back again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Chloe's back, by the way. obviously.
Everyone, back.
Sorry
again
for being back.
Sorry. But what I really liked about what Ren spoke about was that they really wanted to share their knowledge, and especially from like when they were talking about with GCAP and the tools, and really trying to share knowledge from both ends, where it's like the back end perspective, but also how you use it as a creative. It's really, really awesome.
Just a really exciting chat. And now I think it's about time we jump on over to Martin Binfield from Abandoned Sheep to talk about his game, Schrödinger's Cat Burglar.
How exciting.
Hi, I'm Martin Binfield of Abandoned Sheep. Currently I'm working on Schrödinger's Cat Burglar, which is essentially Portal meets Stray.
Where did that come from?
Initially, the idea was going to be about two humans who had been entangled. It was going to be called The Entangle Men. And when I was considering like making a prototype for it, and I had a cat model from a previous prototype that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, I should use that cat model for this Schrödinger game. And then Schrödinger's Cat Burglar just completely came from there. It's like an idea that was sitting, waiting to be hit on, basically.
God, there are a lot of good names. Where do these great names kind of come from as well? I got to ask.
Like the character names.
I mean, you've got Lazy Susan, who's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, Lazy Susan was just like, it just seemed to make sense. Like, the reason she's called that, we haven't put it in the narrative yet, but she spins on her chair like a Lazy Susan. So it's like, that's why she got that name. And Mittens, the main character, it was initially planned that you would be able to call the cat whatever you wanted to, your own names. And Mittens was just the default placeholder. But it works.
It works, absolutely. And how long have you guys been in development?
I've been working on the game since about 2018 as like a background project.
Yeah.
But we got funding and have been in development since late 2021, early 2022.
Right. Oh my God. And that's Screen Australia funding?
Yeah,
is that
so
right?
We got funding initially from Carina Initiatives under the AstroFund thing, which is all about getting puzzle games made to get increased interest in STEM subjects. And then Screen Australia also put some money into the game to get us even further. And yeah, so it's been great to have that stuff so I can employ people like Ziggy, the artist, and Elliot, our narrative designer, and other people like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how helpful has that kind of funding been? Has it been kind of, I guess, crucial to getting things over the line?
If that hadn't been there, this would still be a hobby project. And yeah, it's made it into an actual real game. And it's given me the opportunity to bring it to people to sort of gauge how much interest there is. Mm. And it turns out a lot. It turns out people are really interested in the game, which is great. And I would never have known that had I not been able to take it to this point.
Absolutely. And the first time I actually saw Schrodinger's Cat Burglar was last year at PAX. Mm-hmm. And it's come a long way. I got to try it again. So it's definitely changed a bit. And what kind of, from PAX last year to now, what have you guys kind of been working on the most?
So the one of the main things we did in the run-up to PAX was to convert the game from just being purely top-down to having a third-person camera. Yep. So that version of the game we showed last year was a top-down level but viewed from within. So since then, we've been reworking the levels to have height for one thing. So now we're in third-person. You can go up and down, and in the demo, you can jump into an air duct and run above rooms and see them from there, which really feels very cat-like and is really good. So we're working on that, and we're working on grey boxing the rest of the game, working on the mechanics there, and trying to feel like this is a really interesting thing with puzzle games, is getting that level of gettable and mind-blowing. You want to let people do things they couldn't otherwise do, but also make it so they know what they're going to be doing. It's not just a random thing.
Absolutely, and one of arguably, there's a lot. There's a lot of interesting things about this game, but one of my favorite parts, I'd say, is the mechanic of being able to split the cat in two, right?
Yeah.
But as well, the being observed and not being observed. Yeah. How did that kind of come to be, not just on a conceptual level, but also on a game development level?
Yeah, yeah. Because that was when I first had the idea of the two things being entangled together. It wasn't really anything until that balance of them being connected came about. So the idea there is essentially that when you split, obeying the rules of superposition in quantum mechanics, you are one thing that could be in either place.
Yeah.
And when no one's looking, we treat it as you are in both. Essentially you exist everywhere, and you can press two buttons at once and stuff like that. But it's when there's an observer, which is security cameras and stuff, things like that, when they see you, it roots the version of you that it sees as a real cat, and the other one becomes the theoretical cat. And we're treating theoretical very loosely. This isn't how quantum physics works. But essentially, it's ghost mode. So you can go through doors because the doors could theoretically have opened. And you aren't able to interact with anything. So there's a really interesting push and pull in terms of designing stuff, because it's a benefit and a drawback. And so it's the fact that you need to be unseen to be able to get places. You need to be seen in one location to be undetectable somewhere else. All that stuff is it's the sweet spot source. And it's... I think that's what really makes the mechanics work, is that the player is splitting their brain as well. They have to be aware of the state of the other cat while they're moving the theoretical cat. Because we've got cameras that can pan. So it's a timing issue there of I'll be theoretical for a bit and then I'll be unobserved and go from there. Behind the scenes, it was kind of interesting that it essentially became people often say, what happens if both cats are seen at once? And it's that just physically cannot happen, because as soon as one is seen, the other one can't be.
Yeah.
So it solves its own problems in some ways.
And that was Martin Binfill talking about Schrodinger's Cat Burglar. It may seem like our conversation got cut short, and that's actually...
I did notice that.
Because it did.
Oh.
Because Martin gave me the chance to play Schrodinger's Cat Burglar, a test build of the game during our meeting. And I played it last year at PAX, so playing it again this time was really, really neat. I got a whole new perspective on it.
What were the differences that you noticed between last year and this year?
The shift from top down to third person, third cat, was...
Meow.
Meow. The shift from third person to top down was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's just a lot of polish here and there.
Yeah.
The way that the cat looks when it's not being observed looks a lot cooler. It's just some much needed changes that they've done really well.
I love that they base it. I don't know, quantum something. But I think it's really, really cool that they put that they made the hypothesis of Schrodinger's cat into a game.
Yeah.
But also the spin of it is like this heist.
Yeah.
Thieving.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
And you got Lisa
so
Susan,
clever.
Who I mentioned
oh
in
my
the
God.
Chat, but I don't
I'm
actually.
So
I don't actually properly mention as like a thing.
Yeah, I'm she's, so glad you mentioned Lazy Susan.
Yeah, she's a hedgehog or an echidna, one of the two.
What spiky?
Spiky.
Yeah,
spiky boy. She's that, and she's so cute. She's got little glasses on, and she's like, she's Mittens' like tech person. Hedgehog, echidna. I think it's a hedgehog. She's really little. She's got the little face. Then Mittens is just great. A much needed addition as well is that they gave you a button to make Mittens meow.
Meow.
Meow indeed. Yeah. For real.
I love, you know what, same thing with, it's a different game, but with Copycat, with A Spoonful One, they've also got a meow button and Stray has a meow button. I'm really liking the meow button.
I feel like an important part of making a game where you are a cat, you got to have a meow button.
Or I'm also like any animal. I want to like... Like I say, you're a snake. I want to like tss button, you know?
Press S to S.
Yeah.
Or like, F like to Nay and you're a horse.
Or like, you know, hoot. I want a hoot button.
I'd love a hoot button.
You know what? I want more animal games and I want to be able to make noises.
Do you think we're kind of regressing? Because like you say all these words and all these things and I immediately think about those children's books with the buttons. The cow says, moo.
And we're chicken like, goes,
take me back. Damn.
Yeah. I want to regress back to childhood because the world is scary.
The world is scary.
But that's what his play though. It's going back to that moment of childhood where you are revisiting these really fun moments where it's triggering those really dopamine little things in your brain. So... Yeah, I want the cow goes moo button.
Amen.
Amen.
And now I think it's about time we move on to next chat. This one was with Jonathan Kova, who's making Pedal Rebel VR, a VR game that also doubles as an exercise game.
Hi, so I'm Jonathan Kovach, and I'm making a video game called Pedal Rebel VR.
All right, and what's the gist? Because I've seen how it kind of plays. I've seen pictures.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting novel experience is that it's actually a VR video game that you play on an exercise bike. So you get on top of the bike, you put the headset on, you start pedaling, and in the headset, you're kind of in this cyberpunk world dodging traffic and going stupid fast and listening to awesome synth music. It's really cool.
And what kind of inspired that?
It's been a thing where like I've just been falling in love with VR and trying to do all these really crazy experiences, but I live in a small apartment, so I don't have the space to do the things what I do. Well, I do, but I punch a lot of walls and shelves and break things.
Yeah, there's just things in the way.
The real world really gets in the way.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm trying to make this thing work, right? So I wanted to then create a game that utilizes a smaller space but still feels like a big thing. I mean, we all got stuck in our homes too much during COVID and stuff like that. You're sick of staring at the same four walls, right? And
totally.
Quite a lot of us had ambitions about getting fit during COVID, and then, you know, it's hard to exercise indoors, right? So I thought, if I make a cool game that keeps me addicted to this and wanting me to keep playing, then let's do it.
Let's do it. Absolutely. And what's development like so far?
Yeah, it's thing like I'm just doing it part time. I'm doing other things for business and for money and things like that. But just like really trying to do as much as I can myself. So I'm learning all the things we need to do and learning kind of every little piece of it. I mean, I have a lot of hobbies. And the good thing is that I can sort of roll all of those in. So I get to play around with the 3D. I get to play around with the graphic design. I get to make a cool logo. I've even dabbled with some music production as well and make some cool like synthwave music that really just gets you really pumped up for playing the game. So it's been a really fun process. And then obviously testing the game can get a bit tiresome after a while if I'm constantly going, oh, I changed this one thing and now I got to get back on the bike, right? So it's been a really cool process. But coming to GCAP and meeting everyone at this event has been really helpful to sort of help me know what the next step is in the games industry in Australia.
Thinking about it, because I'm a sweaty person. It gets too hot, I'm a mess. So with, you know, being on an exercise bike, and wearing a VR headset,
how you kind of planning to combat any potential discomfort while playing?
Sure. So some people are obviously sweatier than others. There's already a lot of aftermarket stuff that's really good for VR. Like you can get silicon facial interfaces, we call them. You can get foam ones and they absorb sweat like a sponge.
Yeah.
But the silicon ones are really easy to clean, things like that, which is helpful. And then also like you're in your own home, so you either blast the air conditioner or a fan can be really good too, just to get the air away from you while you're pedaling. But it also makes you feel like you're going faster, right?
Oh yeah, so it's chucking
a fan and putting it in your face and playing is really cool.
Yeah.
The good thing is it's not a one-to-one fitness experience, right? It's that little bit of activity that makes the game feel better. So you can actually pedal quite leisurely. And if you're really good at like dodging the cars and weaving between things and hitting speed boosts, then you can still go really fast without actually having to pedal really fast. And then that just helps you want to play. You can just play the game for a bit longer and really get into it. Or you can turn the traffic off, turn the music down, put on some of your own tunes or a podcast or an audiobook and just
listen to Pocket Buzz.
Yeah. And then you can just go for a cruise, right? I feel like sometimes we just want to be in our own space and we want to sort of get away from
it.
Chuck on some cool vibes and just cruise. So we've also done a bit of that.
What was like the big deciding factor when it came to like, this has got to be on a bike? This has to be a bike-based VR game.
Again, it was just that play space thing of like the whole industry is trying to solve how do we do locomotion in VR, right? Mm. And so when VR first came out, we thought, oh, it's really cool. Oh, but you can't move the player too quickly because they'll get motion sickness, right? Because we were all sitting down.
Yeah.
Then the Vive came out and they went, well, let's do room scale VR so you can stand up and you can move around. But that was limited to 5 meters by 5 meters. And again, like, then people started making these cool games, really active, and then people are jumping off of planks and jumping into their TVs. We've also seen those videos, right? And then people are trying to make these treadmills that kind of feel awkward and aren't really that good. So everyone's trying to solve this locomotion problem in VR. And yeah, I thought, well, if we can make it a really, really small space, anyone can play it. And if we can find a way to make it fitness-based, then let's do that. The other anecdote I've got is that I got really into this archery game, and it was really fun. And I thought, oh, but like this could be way more fun if I had a real bow and arrow.
Yeah.
So I took two broken ice hockey sticks and duct taped them together to the controller and added an elastic band. And I've got a TikTok on my all my socials, my YouTube shorts and everything of me playing this game with two hockey sticks. And now I'm getting comments from people like, that's not real archery, or his form is terrible. And I'm like, I just wanted the game to feel more real.
I'm having fun.
And the next day I could barely open doors because I've been holding this bow out and playing this video game. And I went, oh, my arms are so tired. And then I went, wait a minute, I just feel like I've been to the gym. And I was shooting gremlins trying to break into my castle for 2 hours. And I went, this is way better than going to the gym, right? So that was sort of my inspiration, was that if you can make the game exciting enough that and you align the thing that the gamer wants to do. What does a player want to do? We want to go fast. We want to kill things. We want to smash stuff. We want to make a cool experience. Mm-hmm. If I can align that with some kind of activity that then is benefiting your body, and the game is benefiting you from like, I get to play this game, and then you're doing two things, right? You're killing two birds with one stone. You don't have to go to the gym and have time to and find time to play video games, because I'm in my 30s. It's really hard to find time to play video games now. And it's so much harder. And I do a lot of video editing. So I'm sitting at my desk all day. And then my friends come on Discord and they want me to play Apex or something. And I'm like, yeah, but my butt's sore. And I need to get up and move my body because I've been stuck here all day. So I thought, let's find a way to make these games active. And we can get up and we can move around, can enjoy ourselves. And then, of course, then your body rewards you with endorphins and stuff too, right? So I thought, let's find this nice happy medium. Let's find something that's just a little bit active, but it's a cool game.
Yeah.
And let's get gamers to play it, and then that way we're off the couch a little bit more, right? And then hey, if you start to really enjoy it, then you can start looking into more cycling based stuff or more other active things. But the first step is just definitely let's just be a little bit more active, but can we make it super fun?
And that was Jonathan Kovac talking about Pedal Rebel VR, a very cool concept. And like, I did ask, like, how's it going to go with wearing a VR headset, doing an exercise bike? Like, aren't you going to get like sweaty and yucky?
I vomit.
You vomit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Get a little dizzy. I also get dizzy from walking. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, no. Like, yeah. If I do like really excessive exercise,
mm-hmm.
I'll have that feeling of needing to throw up. But I'm so scared of vomiting that I just like hold it in.
Personal question, do you vomit a little then you little swallow or to keep that down?
No,
or?
I heavy breathe, like yeah. pregnancy breaths, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry.
I'm sure that sounded awesome.
Sorry, listeners.
Sorry.
I'm a curator. I don't talk on podcasts.
And now you
now
do.
Now I do. Sorry.
Now you do. So.
But.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But yeah, like
pedal VR.
I think it looks really sick. I think
I like it.
It'd be a really fun thing to do on stream.
Yes.
But at the same time, I get a little too involved in VR games and like mm-hmm. get scared.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
What, like horror games?
Well, like what if a car hits me?
But that happened to you already and you're okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, you're right.
What
I do like though is that the game was inspired from like just moments in COVID.
Mm.
It's a trend that was happening with games and it's like same thing with Animal Crossing when that came out and everyone used that to connect. I thought it was a really interesting way that Jonathan did that to really hone into like the exercise component because you weren't doing that at all. And then it's just kind of given you a whole new perspective and a whole new reality in that period of lockdown too. I think it's just wonderful.
No, it rocks big time. And next one, friend to you.
Oh.
Friend to me.
Friend to us all.
Friend to us all, really. I got to chat with Mads McKenzie.
A gem.
Who you actually recommended me to have a chat with.
Yeah.
And when I found out they were making Draculeshi, I was like, all right.
Yeah,
okay, absolutely.
Let's go. Yeah.
So this is my chat with Mads McKenzie from Fine Feather Friends about Draculeshi.
So I'm Mads McKenzie. I'm the director at Fine Feathered Fiends, and we are making a game called Draculeshti.
And what exactly is Draculeshti all about?
So Draculeshti is a romantic horror visual novel where you, so it's an adaptation of Dracula, where
awesome.
You go to Castle Dracula, and as tends to happen, you get stuck there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe some vampires are going to try and kill you. So you have to kind of pick who in the castle you trust and you want to ally yourself with and try and get out of there alive. And then being a romance game, whoever you kind of team up with, you know, you sort of develops into a romance.
Yeah.
And that's the general, that's the gist of things.
Yeah. And what kind of sparked the desire to go into the Draculore?
That's a cool word.
Yeah. What did inspire you to go into the Draculore?
So I am just like generally a big sort of Dracula fan.
Oh, yeah.
Like one of my favorite movies of all time is the, I guess, less than respectable Dracula adaptation, Van Helsing 2004.
That rocks.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So I've been making like narrative games, like visual novel type games for kind of 8 years. And
yeah.
I wanted to make one where like the premise is really clear and sort of people come into it with a good sense of like, okay, this is the thing it's going for. These are the characters. And, you know, going for something like Dracula where I say it's like a Dracula dating sim and people are immediately like, oh, cool, I know who Dracula is. I get what you're
guy.
Doing.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Or sometimes we'll even just be like, it's gay Dracula. And people will be like, oh, cool, I understand.
Awesome. And what kind of, how'd you find yourself making games.
So I always wanted to do game development. Like I finished, I went in my final year of high school. I went to the career counselor and I was like, I want to do game development. And she was like, how about you don't? What if you go into something law?
Else?
Yeah, and I was specifically like, I think I want to move to Melbourne and do game dev. And she was like, no, this isn't Christchurch, New Zealand.
Oh my God. I can respect someone being like, no.
It was very fun. And I got really mad about it. But then I also didn't know what to do. Yeah. So for a few years, I did nothing. And then I had some friends who started making a visual novel and awesome. They didn't invite me to work on it with them. And I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to make a better visual novel than you folks are. They didn't finish theirs. And mine wasn't very good, but it was released.
Exactly.
So you know.
And what was that?
That was a game called Inverness Nights that I put out back in 2017.
Yeah. And explain that one to us.
So that one is like, I feel like all of my descriptions are just going to be like gay X.
Good.
But basically,
good.
That one was like gay Highlander. So I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Highlander.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's the one with the immortal Scottish guy and he like wanders around being sad and has some sword fights and Queen plays over the top. It's cool. I like that movie and I was like, hey, good movie. What if he was gay though?
What? Are they cooking?
I basically was like, what if he was gay though? And then I looked up a whole bunch of Scottish history and I was like, okay, these are all the ramifications of that. And I made a game about it.
That rocks.
Yeah. Like I say, it was so game. There are a lot of things about it that I look back on and I'm like, I don't know why I made that choice.
And that was your first game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What do you think you kind of learned from that experience?
Well, that one of the big things that I discovered was I like didn't have at the time sort of a very strong pitch for it. Like I would try and summarize it for people and I would be like, there's a guy and he's immortal and he's in Scotland and it's gay and some stuff happens. And it wasn't like a very compelling sort of setup. And so for all my games from then I was like, I should probably have something I can boil down to an interesting one sentence pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With visual novels in the current age, right? People are always kind of trying to, I guess, do something different, right? Mm. And what does Draculeshti have that kind of stands itself out from the rest?
So our goal across the course of development has basically been to just like make a really, really good visual novel.
Awesome.
So a lot of people, when they approach visual novels, you'll get, you know, folks who think that the way to rise above it all is to like staple a whole bunch of additional stuff on. So it'll become more about like, oh, we made a visual novel, but also there are a bunch of mini games here. And then a lot of the time I feel like, you know, whatever additional gameplay they've attached to it might be good.
Yeah.
The visual novel might also be good, but together a lot of the time they're like distracting from each other rather than complementing each other. And just in the last couple of years, there have been some like visual novels that have come out that have just kind of gone, we're making a visual novel. All it is a visual novel, but we're doing an amazing job and making the best one of those we can.
Yeah.
So in particular, there's this team called Black Tabby Games. They're based in one of the smaller states in America, you know, in the middle of America somewhere. And they made this game called Scarlet Hollow. It's an amazing like horror game. They're about to release a game called Slay the Princess. And their whole thing...
Oh my God, Slay the... I played the demo of Slay the Princess.
Yeah, the demo is really
twice.
Cool.
It's really cool.
So you have teams like that that are just making visual novels and saying how do we do this as good as we can? And they've been a real inspiration for like, hey, you know, if you just make a visual novel and try and, you know, do the story really well, have incredible art and like do interesting stuff with choices and narrative that get people to sort of invest into it, like not only can that be enough, that can be an amazing experience. And there are a lot of people who think about ways of, you know, drawing people into visual novels that are more about gimmicks and miss the fact that you can just like do a really great job with the core stuff, and that's what makes the difference.
And once again, that was Mads McKenzie talking about Draculeshti. That game sounds so much fun.
Oh my God. Did you play the demo?
I didn't get the chance to. Steph did.
And Steph played the demo.
I don't know if she played the demo. She saw someone playing it and was like trying to like backseat demo.
They are just incredible. I really like what they're doing in the interactive text-based game space. And I got to play the demo in PAX. I got to romance little ghosts.
Ooh.
A little hot ghost action. Loved it. There was a moment, and you could also, when they mentioned they were inspired by Van Helsing from 2004, you can see that in the game. And playing it, there was like little moments where I started feeling anxious and feeling really scared for what was going to happen. And that horror element really came in. And the art's incredible. Oh, highly recommend.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I feel like a kind of unsung hero of the horror game genre is in the visual novel space. And I feel like because, you know, there was a really interesting talk at Parallels about horror games that aren't just first person, talking about text-based horror games, and the text-based horror game in question that's being shown off looked fucking sick.
Oh, I was terrified.
And so scared.
And how they spoke about the aspect of, like, you're hiding behind the continue button.
Yeah.
And in some games, particularly, that's made for text-based games, so they were exploring how to not hide behind that continue button and escalate that fear. And, I mean, I'm not going to lie, when I was playing the game at PAX for Draculeshti, I had to stop for a minute and being like, ooh, I don't want to go down there. Yeah. I don't want to go to the basement.
Yeah.
I'm just a little scared guy.
And then this next one that we've got is with Bryce Watson, who's currently making Frog Rain.
My name is Bryce Watson. I'm working on our game Frog Rain. It's a Metroidvania where you play as a frog in a hat and your tongue is your grappling hook.
So what kind of inspired the creation of Frog Rain?
Honestly, I was going on a hike one time and at the bottom of the hike there was literally just a sign that had a big display of all the different frogs that lived in the area. And at the time I was playing a bunch of Metroidvania games and I sort of just, my brain just put the two together pretty much immediately. So we've been sort of doing it since the start of the year. We had the idea 2 years ago, but other stuff got in the way. And then since the start of the year, we've been working on it. We're all sort of volunteering, doing it at the moment. We're trying to get funding currently. But yeah, it's been good. We've got a prototype together and we've showed it at a little event. And we're showing it at some bigger events later this year.
It's been good. How's the volunteer system kind of working for you?
Well, obviously people are only able to work on it when they have time and when they don't have to go to their job, which they're paying the rent with. It's sort of the thing of nobody's getting paid, so everyone's happy with it. If I was earning money and no one else was, there'd probably be more question marks. But no, it was sort of the idea of we're doing this because we think it's cool, it's a good experience. You know, some of our people are straight out of university and things like that, and people I've, you know, acquaintances and friends before we started this. But yeah, the expectation is I'm trying my best to make sure they're not volunteers forever. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And with Frog Rain, what have been kind of like some of the highs and some of the lows throughout the development process?
Well, some of the lows is people not being able to work on it at long, several month periods at a time. Like our programmers, they're actually currently working on their own Metroidvania, which is one of the reasons we worked with them in the first place. They're like, oh, I want to work on your game. I'm already doing my own, so we can copy-paste some of the things across and it should work fine. But they obviously have to finish their thing now, so they haven't been able to work for months. Like, we've made prototypes and all sorts of stuff, taking it to events this month. We probably had a month and a half of dev time total. The rest has been art and design and me trying to get money. So that's definitely the downside with everyone volunteering is there can be long periods of time where no one has time to work on the thing. And you have to really try your best not to let it stagnate and have the ball rolling backwards. You sort of need to be pushing it forward, even if I'm the only one that can or will at that time.
You're working out of Brisbane.
Yeah.
And do you find that there's good or at least getting better support for game development in Queensland?
I've come in at a very good time. So obviously, I said we had the idea 2 years ago. When we had the idea, there was nothing. There was no funding. There was no programs there. As far as I, like, there were actually developer groups, but they were very, like, internal. You had to kind of know someone to get into them.
Yeah.
And literally the year that we started working on the game properly was the year that the funding came back.
Nice.
So very lucky in that regard.
Incredibly lucky.
So it's getting better every year. I believe they've increased the funding this year.
Yeah, even more so.
I think it went from 2 million to 5 million. I think that's just what I'm remembering from the email newsletter that they sent out. I don't know if I'm even interpreting that correctly. Like, I don't know if that's 5 million over 2 years or something.
Screen Australia has, they started out with giving 2 million and then gave another 2 million to some more games. And then I think another 1 million to some more games after that. So like the funding just kind of keeps coming, which is pretty good.
It's good. Well, games keep making more and more money every year, so you would hope we'll get more and more funding. That's not always the case. Like, New South Wales just lost funding, even though they made more money than any other year before. Yeah, so whatever support they had, which wasn't funding, I don't think, got pulled even more so, which I don't know how you can pull nothing. But
oh, my God, it's bizarre. Gone. It's absolutely bizarre. I do hope it gets better.
I know Victoria and Brisbane and Queensland are two pretty good spots to be in the moment. I've heard South Australia is pretty good too.
South Australia is getting better, thanks to a lot of indie devs down there. At the end of the day, it is very much the indie development community that's kind of at the forefront of the battle for funding.
Yeah, like we have some bigger companies around as well, bigger studios, but yeah, like they're obviously benefiting from the funding and they're probably the reason we're getting it because they're spending the most money in the States.
Ooh, yeah.
Like one of the reasons the funding has gone up is because they've gone, there was like $11 million spent in Queensland on making games. Maybe we should incentivize them to make more of that. So without those big studios, we wouldn't be getting the funding in the first place, probably.
Totally.
But yeah, the indies are the ones that have been kicking and screaming, asking for it.
Absolutely.
And they need to keep doing that
as well. Oh my God, yes. We need to be as loud as we can, basically.
That was Bryce Watson talking about Frog Rain. Everybody's had quite a different experience with government funding and stuff.
Everyone has. There's people like, I know it's in New Zealand, but Dredge was quite successful with the funding. Same thing with Unpacking, with our able and the team from Witchbeam, that would go to, was it Sweden?
Yeah.
Yes, they would go to Sweden with the funding as well.
And Cult of the Lamb
funding enabled to get really successful. But sometimes, I mean, it also depends on what type of funding is available in which state that you're in.
Yeah.
Yes.
And my take on it is like I'm very supportive of the government doing as much as they can. And that being said, there can always be more to be done.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm very excited to see how the industry kind of continues to support, and then in turn the support from the government turns out some really great titles that make a lot of money, and then therefore the government sees that and goes, all right, let's put even more money into
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And I think it has been seen as well, and there are different types of funding that are coming through from each state as well, and each serving its own purpose to help the community. So for like Melbourne, they're going to be highly supportive of independent developers because that's the home of independent developers. And you can see like in WA and South Australia where they are also starting to help their developers and give funding and help them to travel to things like PAX and GCAP to really elevate their practice.
Totally.
Mm.
We've got one last one.
Yes.
And this one was really exciting for me because this developer reached out being like, you know, I know Serals from back in my Kotaku days.
Mm.
He knew Alex Walker and was keen to have a chat about his time in the industry. He's been making games for a while and made a game that not a lot of people actually know is an Australian game.
No, and it is exciting to tell people that title, and they're like, oh, what? It's Australian? Same thing with Fruit Ninja. Like, what? It's Australian? I'm like, yeah, we rock.
Australia's commitment to the mobile market has been immense.
Absolutely.
You know? And
groundbreaking.
And is just not really made as big of a deal because it's mobile games.
Mobile games aren't serious.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's like so many big, big mobile games were made in Australia.
Absolutely.
And so on that note, here's my chat with Matt Hall from Hipster Whale, who you may know as the developer of Crossy Road.
Woo!
Can I get your name?
Matthew Hall.
Where you work?
Hipster Whale.
And how your career kind of started?
How did it start?
Yeah.
I really loved to play games, and I was in the Commodore 64 era, so a very long time ago. And my parents got me a Commodore 64 for my birthday and one game. It didn't take me very long to finish the one game, so I quickly had to pivot into making them. So, yeah, I got my start at 8 years old. Professionally, it took quite a long time. So I was in a bit of a dark period. So just as I was making games as a kid, once I was starting to be able to make them, the bedroom coders were gone and it was all replaced by publishers. And publishers, there was one here in Australia, basically, which was Melbourne House.
Yeah, wow.
So there was really nowhere to go. Mm. And so I just ended up doing IT, more general IT in Adelaide. When I came out of there, it's like I started to apply, but there's just so few studios. So I only actually joined the games industry in 2001. So I was a bit of a late starter for someone of my age. Yeah.
But I mean, like 2001 is
a long time now. Yeah, it's 23 years, right?
Weird to think about. But yeah, and I mean, you're with Hipster Whale, and of course Crossy Road comes from there. With the people that you kind of encountered over time, when it comes to your work, are they surprised to find out that Crossy Road is made by an Australian studio?
It doesn't often come up much where we're actually from. I mean, as soon as I open my mouth, they know where I'm from. This sort of little successes come from everywhere, I think. Mm. Yeah, big successes. Yeah, they're a little rarer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think over the years the, I guess, kind of like respect for mobile games has grown a bit more? I feel like it's a very different perspective between the consumer and the developer when it comes to mobile games, because I know a lot of people have made mobile games that have done really, really well and they're awesome, but then you talk to the average consumer. Me writing for Kotaku for as long as I did, anytime I wrote about mobile games, I'd get a comment being like, why are you writing about this? Who cares about mobile games? And I feel like that's changed recently, like in more recent years, right?
It's hard to say. Like, it's just hard to say. Like, everyone interprets mobile games differently. Like, what are they playing at the time?
Yeah.
Maybe there's a big scandal that's happened, or studios have been closed, or maybe something awesome was released. It's just, you just never know how you feel about it day to day. Personally, I found games to be a little frustrating because although with Crossy Road we had a very clear vision of the game we were going to make, and I knew how I was going to, you know, I'm going to air quotes, you can't see it, monetize it. We knew we were going to do an ad-supported game, and so that's what we built on. After that, we wanted to try to be a bit more responsible with our monetization, but it was kind of arresting. Like, each time we'd have a game idea, the question was, all right, how are we going to construct the meta? And it took a lot of the fun out of it, I think.
Yeah.
You would have a great idea, but weren't sure how to keep people playing it.
Mm.
Yeah, it was tough. So at the moment, I like to zig when others zag. Or is it zag when others zig? I'm not sure.
I feel like you can go either way, right?
Either way, right?
You can use either way.
It depends on if they're zigging or zagging.
Yeah, if they're zigging, that's when you zag. But if they're zagging, that's when you zig.
Yeah, the last couple of years I took a sidestep and have been working on interactive romantic fiction app for the last couple of years. So something completely out of my wheelhouse. Yeah, and being the CTO on that. So doing all the programming, whereas I've had periods where I've not programmed for 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's been fun to be back in that space, explore new technology and make games for other people.
Totally. So and
apps for other people, I should say.
How does it compare to the work you were doing?
It's just different. It's just a break. Like, while I've had this little thing, I've had like game ideas again. So we'll see what happens next after that too. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And, you know, considering, once again, you know, you've been officially in the industry since 2001, what have kind of, to you, been the biggest, most glaring evolutions in the industry from your perspective?
From the beginning, like that first one I talked about was the evolution of the, like, you know, authors, right? It's always one person writes a book. So when I was a kid, it was one person writes a game.
Yeah.
That's just what happens. When it suddenly became 2 and 3 and 10 and 100, that was a huge pivot. Like, these games, they weren't possible to make by one person anymore. And of course, the other major pivot was in 2006, 2007, 2008,
yeah,
when Steam came along and Ragdoll Kung Fu was released. It's like, oh, one person can make a game again.
Yeah.
And then the rise of casual during that period as well through Big Fish Games. That was like, I was working in a studio at the time and I was looking left and right going, I think maybe I can be a bedroom coder like I've always wanted. And so, yeah, that's what I did. So they're the two big pivots that have affected me. And I mean, the App Store and the release of the App Store was a big part of that as well.
Yeah, totally. And I guess with the whole concept of like the sole developer as well, do you think that's kind of become easier or harder to
do? No, it's back to impossible again. You could definitely make a game by yourself because the tools are so much easier. But there are so many games being released and you're fighting for eyeballs.
Yeah.
Like there are, you know, we see the big successes like Crossy Road and Hollow Knight, and but for each success there's probably now 1,000 failures. Yeah. Like it's, I always feel a little sad when I see other people working on something, because I'm like, I hope it does well, but the odds are against them.
Oh my God, yeah. And I think as well it comes down to like gamer expectations as well, right? Like even I think the myth of the truly sole developer in this day and age, like people thinking that Toby Fox was the only one that made Undertale, which is very not true. I think the expectations that gamers have on developers to somehow build a huge game all on their own, I think plays into it as well, right?
I have a little story there. Like when I was working at Tantalus, you know, we were sitting there making the game, which in this case was Pony Friends.
Yeah.
That was the title I was working on. But the notion of like how is a game marketed was handled by the publisher. It was like this iron curtain.
Yeah.
So I was really overjoyed. That was the part I enjoyed the most when I went independent, is like, okay, what is marketing? And that quickly became like my key skill. Like delivered a lot of talks and advice to people of how to market your game. But the importance of that is now 100 times. And I wouldn't probably be able to do that today. I'm no longer considered an expert in that field. You know, I went to Luke Musket's talk yesterday where he is now, he's had a real desire to make a game by himself.
Yeah.
But of course, he's doing that through YouTube and creating YouTube videos. And so, again, that's a smart thing to do, because if you're an independent developer like Stardew Valley, it's hard to imagine him working as well now without really showing his face and being a part of the narrative.
Oh, yeah.
Like Choo Choo Charles was another really interesting one-man person success this last year.
I think it was last year. Yeah, because it was at the Future Games Show, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but that was really exciting again, like, but not everyone can do that because it'll saturate and then everyone, it's everything's tough now.
It's interesting as well because with Stardew Valley, I think Stardew Valley is such a good example of like how, you know, one guy can get such a huge success, but also how it can just absolutely ruin you.
Sure.
Because like, I think it was in Jason Schreier's book, Blood, Sweat and Pixels.
Yeah, I read where, that.
A great book, great book. And he... you know, he talked to Eric Barone, that's his name, and just the absolute toil that he went through and how he basically like threw his life away is the wrong word, but he wasn't well. He wasn't healthy. He wasn't living a fulfilling life while he was making Stardew Valley. Sure. Is there like a worry that stories like that may be pushing people into the wrong direction when it comes to making games?
Think of all the other people who have thrown 5 years into their game and didn't have the success that he did, and those stories would be really... really common. And the notion of that's how you find success is to throw your all at it is not, absolutely not true. Like Crossy Road was Andy and I, we spent 12 weeks on it. Like we didn't throw away our life. We had a little break at the end. Like I think Andy went off at the end, felt energized, and he made another game in between that and
you
releasing
Crossy
another
Road
one.
In 12 weeks?
Yeah, it was really fast. Yeah.
Oh my God. How?
It was easier back then because we didn't have to necessarily worry about in-app purchases so much. Like, just some things have gotten a lot harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would also need to do a lot more we were really fortunate because I had built up a reputation with Apple.
Yeah.
I'd had my three number ones before, so I was able to say, hey, check out my new game. What do you think? And they're like, we like it.
Yeah.
So we managed to get featuring through building a reputation over many years. Again, how many people are able to do that? It's just, we're just fortunate. Yeah,
absolutely. And yep. I think a big
right game at the right time. I think if exactly. we released Crossy Road today, it would flop. We would have a real trouble getting the eyeballs on it. Yeah.
That was Matt Hall from Hipster Whale talking about Crossy Road, his experience in the industry. And I love hearing from people who have been doing it for ages.
Yes.
I mean,
they know.
They know the ups and downs. They know the ins and outs. And they've seen how the industry has evolved over time.
Mm, so they can be really adapting to what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like especially as well in the mobile sector, because yes. I feel like we hear about the console sector a lot and we hear about people's struggles with developing games for console and for PC. But then when it comes to mobile games, I think a lot of people just don't think about the people behind mobile yes. games. And like because of that, they don't think about kind of the issues that they go through, like, you know, trying to get funding, yes. trying to get a publisher, trying to make sure the money flow stays
exactly.
towards them.
It's almost like mobile games aren't real. Mm. They're not real games, but the effort that it takes to make. And to be honest, I think mobile games are the most important in terms of accessibility because everybody has a mobile phone. Well, yeah. except for a few. I know one person who doesn't, but...
Whoa.
I know. That, unreachable.
They must live a really cool life.
You know what? They do.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well is I think because mobile games are so like pretty much expected to be either really, really cheap or yeah. free.
Yes.
Because it's a small device. It's quote unquote not as big as a console yeah. game. That being said, I have seen mobile games that have come from console games and been made for mobile and yeah. then vice versa. And, like, they have to make the mobile version cheaper.
Exactly.
Or else people will...
They won't get it.
...go, bonkers, I'll right?
Be like, why is it so expensive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, and then due to that expectation to be free, you know, they've got to... They still need to find a way to make money.
No, exactly.
And so... Yes, there might be microtransactions. And I'm not a huge fan of microtransactions, no. but especially if they're quite predatory.
Yes.
That like being boxes, said, no. there's a right way to do them.
Yes.
There's a right way to do them. And that way is, how do I describe it? Like I played a game called, I think it's called Parasite Days,
mm-hmm.
which is a very, very weird game. But
it sounds weird.
It rocks. It's so weird, but it rocks.
Nice.
And like they've got a little like internal store. In the internal store, you can use real money to buy like bonuses that help you in the game. Like
oh,
for
cool.
example, there's a mini game where you thread a piece of thread through a needle
mm-hmm.
and your hand is moving up and down while that happens, or the needle is. And you can buy a bonus to give you like a laser pointer that
cool.
makes it easier to thread it.
Yeah.
And any purchase that you make in that store, including that one, any purchase you make also gets rid of ads in the game.
Oh.
So if you make no purchase, you can play the game making no purchases at all, but you still will get ads.
Yeah.
But they're
the minute you do anything.
Only semi-intrusive and they're there so the developer can make money because that game is free.
Yes.
But you know, you can also give money through that other avenue, and I think that's a really good example of a good way to do monetization. But like, I don't care about ads as long as they're not like yeah. all the time,
and they're not like a minute.
Yeah, I don't care because like,
yeah,
these developers have to make money somehow.
Exactly.
Some like developers aren't as lucky. Most developers aren't as lucky as, like, for example, the developers that make it onto Apple Arcade.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have that bit of funding that gets the game out there.
And, for
you know,
sure.
Luckily, the Australian government, once again, has, you know, still been receptive to mobile game funding, yeah. which is huge.
Massive.
But, yeah, that was my experience at GCAP. I had a couple more conversations in my time there, but they were quite long. And they're going to be their very own episodes. So yes. if you're listening right now, Stay tuned for those because I'll be chatting with Andy Brophy and Olivia Haynes, who are currently just
beautiful people. Beautiful I'm sorry people. I interrupted you.
No, no, that's okay. Andy's making Knuckle Sandwich, which will be coming out on the 23rd of November.
Yeah.
Very huge. And Olivia Haynes, who's making Surf Club. They are married. They are beautiful. They've been helping each other with their games.
And they're in love.
And they're in love.
They're in love.
They're in love. So, Chloe, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me rooming with me and eventually agreeing to be on this podcast.
Look, I liked the sniping initially, and now I also appreciate you asking me to come back.
My pleasure. And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? And hey, if you really like what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Back Pocket over on Patreon, where you can get access to our lovely Discord full of all sorts of buds. And if you support us at the silver or gold tier, you can get access to even more audio content just like this. You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. AEST, and on TikTok, where we are constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. Then there's also the socials, a la Twitter and Threads and whatnot, which you're also welcome to get around. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in, and as the end of Seinfeld would say,
bow, 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 bow.
Bye.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.